Thanks for calling Toyota. This is Jan.
I just adopted a new best friend, and I'm looking for a Toyota so we can make the most out of summer.
With a new RAV4, you can take your pup for a drive up the coast. You can take a Prius to the park, or you can take a Tundra to kayak at a remote lake.
One problem, Jan.
Oh?
My new best friend's a cat.
Your summer starts here, but it all ends June 3rd. Toyota, let's go places. Dealer inventory may vary. See your participating Toyota dealer for details.
Visit your Front Range Toyota stores today. Toyota, let's go places.
And welcome to episode 94, the Alfred Williams episode, my favorite player of all time, of McChesney Unchained on DNVR.com. Make sure you go check out everything DNVR related, DNVR underscore sports on Twitter. It's an incredible follow. Get down to the bar when everything gets back to normal. Off of Colfax, it's an incredible place. I am your host, Matt McChesney, as always. Episode 94 is going to rock, and it's going to be to the point because that's the way it's gotten here on the Front Range. When it comes to football, that's for damn sure. We have a big show for you today. We've got Cody Rourke joining us today. Join us to talk about your Denver Broncos. He's the host of Locked on the Broncos and the contributor for Pro Football Network. He does a bunch of film breakdown. We'll talk about your Denver Broncos and get his opinion on a whole bunch of different topics. And we'll also talk about the NFL as a whole to a point. The playoff picture is starting to come clear. There's no more undefeated in the NFL as Pittsburgh had an inexplicable loss yesterday to the Washington football team. But we're going to start with college football right off the bat, and we're going to get straight into it. So episode 94, McChesney Unchained rolls. All right, so college football. UNLV quarterback Max Gilliam is going to die from high-fiving, and apparently he had to apologize for his parents being super loaded, going on a yacht, and being part of a reality TV show where he's eating sushi off of a naked model stripper hot chick. And he had to apologize for this. His girlfriend was there with him, like sitting next to him on the yacht. He had to rent the yacht. You know how expensive it is to rent a yacht? Expensive. Why does he have to apologize for this again? I mean, he's going to die from high-fiving, like I said, but this is pretty weak that he has to apologize simply for doing something on TV that every man on earth, well, most men on earth, would want to do. I mean, especially if you've got your girlfriend's permission, your wife's permission, you're probably eating that sushi. You're lucky he's not going after the tuna. Oh, ho, 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 ho. I'll probably have to apologize for that. But yeah, I think that UNLV is dog shit, and you're talking about the quarterback eating sushi off of a naked chick. I don't think that he should be apologizing for this, but he's young, and I'm sure somebody got in his ear and was like, well, it's not cool that I didn't get to do that, so you have to apologize. Max, a little advice from the big guy is ask for permission, not for forgiveness, and you'll get a lot further in this life. All right, so college football as we roll. The top four remains the same. Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame and Ohio State. Looks like Ohio State's going to get a chance to play for the Big Ten title, assuming Michigan can field a team and they don't fire leading up to the game. Boy, that's been a train wreck. I wish there was a little bit more parity in college football, but at the same time, I like the playoff. I wish they would expand it at this point. I don't think changing the system is going to go anywhere. The playoff is the right way, but I wish they would do 8 or 10 teams, maybe do 10 and give the top two a bye. Just more teams and more opportunity. I understand some teams are going to get smoked. It is what it is. Some teams are going to pull upsets as well. So I'd like to see that happen down the road. It is what it is this year. You're going to have to just get stuck when it seems like the same four teams over and over and over again. Although LSU won last year and they hadn't been to the playoff ever up to that point. So it is what it is. Rivalry week, another rivalry weekend this weekend. So a lot of big games. I anticipate those same undefeated teams will be undefeated moving into conference championship Saturday. So let's just talk about CU. So CSU right off the bat, they take an L to San Diego State. Good game, lose by 6. I do like what Adazio's doing up there. That's neither here nor there. Their season's pretty much over. They got, I think, one more week and it's a wrap. Hopefully they can get bowl eligible and win 3 games. Colorado goes down to Arizona and beats Arizona 24-13, down 13-0, and they come back. That's huge. 24 unanswered. The defense really clamped down Arizona. Arizona's been a thorn in the side of CU for years. 0-3 the last 3 years, and they've been beating CU continuously since we joined the Pac-12 back in the day. Broussard goes off, goes for 301 yards rushing, the first 300-yard rusher since I was in school there with Chris Brown in 0-2 at Kansas and Lawrence, where I think he went for like 317 or some crazy-ass number. Broussard is absolutely killing it. He's great at pushing front side and hitting that cutback. And that offensive line is absolutely murking people right now. It really doesn't seem to matter who plays center. They rotate 52 in there. He had an okay game. When they solidify the center position, when Austin Johnson gets healthy and he's a redshirt freshman again next year, God, watch out for that offensive line. Casey at Roderick at guard number 70 is a pro. He's absolutely murking people out there. Will Sherman is on one. Philippe is on one. You know, big 74. We take our hat off to you, brother. That sucks. That's a hell of an injury. So hopefully you can recover from that. But Keenan Ray is going to get his opportunity this weekend to start at left guard, it looks like. And he's a UCLA transfer. And if you remember, he's the one that laid the hammer down on that big Stanford defensive tackle at the goal line. Him and Philippe hit that double team where we had the walk-in touchdown in week two. So Keenan can play, and he's about as nasty as they come, and I'm excited to see 54 get his opportunity on the offensive line. I think this weekend against Utah is a massive opportunity for CU as they're ranked 21 in the AP and 22 in the coaches. It's good to be undefeated. It's good to be ranked. It's good to be playing in the bowl games. The Pac-12 only has four bowl games now, with the LA Bowl now getting axed until 2021. So I would like to think that if they stay on this roll, beating Utah 5-0, playing for the Pac-12 title, maybe. We'll talk about that here in a second. But they're looking like they may play in a New Year's Day game bowl or one of the big six. CU's defense has been absolutely elite. If you look at this, 24 points a game, second in the Pac-12, giving up. And then Wales and Landman, they've combined for 20 TFLs up to this point, 15 and a half in the last two games. Landman has literally been over the field. I think he's by far the best linebacker in college football, and I hope that the East Coast bias and the SEC bias doesn't push him out of the running for the Buckus, although I think at this point – the other night when you saw him, they're screenshotting him. He's got the two bumps on his forehead that are bleeding, his knees bleeding. You know, he's just a baller. He's just an absolute baller and the kind of guy you want. And honestly, if he's there at the beginning of the second round, I'm hoping Denver loses out so they can get high picks. You see, if he's there at the beginning of the second round, Denver really needs to think about taking Nate Landman and putting him at the linebacker next to Johnson and rolling. That's neither here nor there. Look, they're two-point favorites for Utah on Friday night. UCLA and USC play. That's a huge rivalry game. Go Bruins. Look, man, I'm pretty damn spiced up about this problem. And let's be real. We're going ranting style right off the bat here on episode 94. The Unchained rant hits you right in the face right off the bat. Buffs you. So, let me just be blunt here. The fact that there's potentially the USC and CU are not going to play for the South title, and SC, is because they're ranked higher, is going to get an opportunity to play potentially a two-loss team if Washington and Oregon, they play this weekend. The winner of that game goes to the Pac-12 title game. Oregon already has two losses. Washington has one. Oregon wins therein. You're a two-loss team that could be potentially unranked is going to go play USC, and USC is going to go because they dodged CU. And CU could potentially be 5-0 and ranked and not get that opportunity to play. And the Pac-12 already came out and said today that they will not, under any circumstance, tell the North that they can't play for the Pac-12 title, because that could have been the easiest way to solve the problem. Just have USC and CU playing the Pac-12 title game if they're both undefeated and ranked, and the Northern participant has potentially two losses and unranked. But of course, that doesn't make sense because Larry Scott's the commissioner and he's a douchebag and he can't. He's just there. He's not there making decisions. He's there just going with the flow. Somebody from Oregon and Washington complained, and that's that. I already despise the Pac-12. This could be another time where, CU is getting screwed. And SC, if they end up going to play for the Pac-12 title and they win and they're undefeated and they play in the Rose Bowl, or I guess it would be Fiesta because the Rose is one of the playoff games this year. I hope that they at least put CU and SC in the Fiesta Bowl against each other. I hope we get an opportunity to play this game at some point. I hope that people that can actually make decisions and get out there and make this happen, go make it happen. Because I personally think that CU could go undefeated this year and win their bowl game. SC wins the Pac-12 and the South, and CU's undefeated and didn't get a chance to play them. That really burns my ass. It really does. And this is the year that we got them in the crosshairs big time, man. Defense is salty. We can run the ball down anyone's throat. SC is overrated, in my opinion. They dodged us once. You know, I understand you can't move the UCLA and Utah games. They can't play each other. I mean, they could, but they're not going to because UCLA and SC are rivals. I wish that they would figure this out and figure out a way for these two programs to play, especially being undefeated. It's going to be a travesty. Potentially undefeated teams in the Pac-12 at the end of the season. I mean, and they don't play each other? That is absolute horseshit, Larry Scott. Horseshit Pac-12. It really burns my ass. Look, do I think CU is going to beat Utah? Yeah, I do. I think Utah's a good team. They struggle with the quarterback position. If Neuer protects the football and we don't turn it over, we play good defense at home, I think they beat Utah. It's going to be a close game. It's going to be a nail-biter, trust me. But CU's got them at home. I think they can get that W as long as they keep knowing what they're doing, especially running the ball. UCLA can absolutely beat SC. They've been scoring points like crazy. Robinson, the quarterback, is a dude. I've been talking to Coach Fry, the offensive coordinator at UCLA, a bunch. He's a good friend of mine and recruits the hell out of this room. And, you know, they're pretty jazzed up to get SC. They think that they can go beat them. So I'm a huge Bruins fan this weekend, and every Buff fan out there should be pulling for UCLA big time. And then to see you can get that W, see who's going to play for the Pac-12 title, probably against Washington. I think Washington will get the Ducks this weekend. So everybody, keep those positive feelings going towards Boulder Way and keep that team undefeated. Carl Durrell, brother, you have done an absolutely amazing job, easily the Pac-12 coach of the year. And I'm surprised he's not getting more recognition for National Coach of the Year. They end up undefeated, winning the Pac-12, and maybe playing in the Fiesta Bowl. Trust me, he's going to get that kind of recognition going his way. And the good thing is Carl's not going to jump ship in the middle of the night for just a little bit more money and perceive better opportunity, which it sure as hell didn't turn out that way, did it, Mel Tucker? So that said, go Buffs. I hope that they mop the floor with the Utes. It's still not a rivalry in my eyes yet, but, you know, it's definitely turning into one as the game seemed to mean more as we go down the line. So we'll see how it goes. But that is the Unchained Rant on McChesney Unchained, episode 94. And we roll into the National Football League. All right, like I said, Cody Work is going to join us here on McChesney Unchained, episode 94, to talk about your Denver Broncos down the line. I wanted to talk about the NFL here for a little bit as we get going before we get into your Denver Broncos. Now, look, man, the National Football League is the refs are driving me up the wall with damn near every game these days. It seems like there's a lot of games that are being dictated, a lot of third downs and a lot of red zone opportunities that are dictated by refs on really ticky-tack fouls. And that's too bad. And it seems like that's the direction we're going to go down in the playoffs too. Very similar to, what was it, 3 years ago where we had the Rams defensive back absolutely run over the New Orleans receiver, and it was a total defensive pass interference that wasn't called. Whereas you're getting other penalties in that game and games similar that are called on ticky-tack, you know, just little tiny grabs or phantom penalties. The phantom roughing the passer penalties out here. They've got to figure out how to minimize this but still do the job during the playoffs, because it's getting to the point where I'm afraid that playoff games are going to be dictated by the refs more so than the players on the field. All right, look, the Steelers take their first loss in the AFC. They're still the one seed, although I wouldn't be surprised if Kansas City takes the one seed from them. Kansas City gets another win. Tennessee and Cleveland play. Cleveland beats the bricks off the Titans at home. Cleveland, can they take that on the road? does that travel? The Raiders get a big win against the winless Jets. It looked like the Jets were going to pull it out, and the Raiders pull it out. They stay in playoff contention. Buffalo goes to Arizona to beat the Niners, pretty much sealed their fate in the NFC. And they get another win. Miami gets another win. The AFC's rolling. The AFC is deep. And, you know, the Colts get another win. There's the seventh seed could have 11 wins this year. So the AFC is going to be an absolute plug fest in the playoffs. I love the extra playoff game this year, especially in the AFC. With all those teams going head-to-head, three games on one day, that's going to be kick-ass. So we'll see what happens over the next 4 weeks and how it pans out. Kansas City is the best team in the AFC, period. Pittsburgh may be the best defensive team in the AFC, but Kansas City is the best team. And they got the best player in the league. And we're going to talk about that with Cody Rourke as we talk about Broncos Chiefs and the Broncos losing their 11th straight to their hated rival, Kansas City. If you look at the NFC, the Giants showed me something this weekend, going to Seattle, winning on the road, and just absolutely just dominating the Seahawks in the trenches on the offensive and defensive side of the ball. Ugly game, ugly score, doesn't matter. Russell Wilson is pretty much contained. They do a good job of bracketing DJ Metcalf and keeping him on the line of scrimmage and really pissing him off to the point where he's more worried about violent stiff arms than you know, the hot route adjustments. There were a couple of times where he missed that. Seattle, it looks like that they're kind of imploding a little bit right now. Teams are figuring out that if you punch them in the mouth, you can play with them. They're going to have to figure out how to run the ball consistently and not just rely on Russell Wilson deep shots to Metcalf and Lockett and more. Their defense has been playing better, but they've been playing against worse offensive teams. You know, they just lost to Colt McCoy. It's not like they had Danny Dimes up there dropping them. Colt McCoy got his first win in, what, like 7-8 years? Good for him, but Seattle can't lose that game when they're in the middle of a division race. The Rams went out and got a W. They beat the Cardinals. The Cardinals have lost, what, 5 of 6? And the one win in that arrangement, or 4 of 6, 5 of 6, something like that. The one win in there was the Hail Mary. So that ain't good. It looks like the people have figured them out a little bit. But this is the nature of the NFL. There's a ton of parity. And that's why I wish, going full circle, the refs would just butt out of it and let the players dictate, you know, the game more than the refs. I like the Rams in the NFC at this point with 4 weeks to play. I think that L.A. is nasty on defense. Man, Aaron Donald's the best defensive player in football, and he has been for the last 2 or 3 years. You don't triple-team this dude, and he's going to ruin your weekend. That's for damn sure. I think that he allows everybody else to really maximize themselves as well because they're all winning one. On ones consistently. Jalen Ramsey is that dude. It looks like that combination of Ramsey and Darnold, if they look, I'm telling you, they find a dominant Mike linebacker and a guy that's a name like a Ray Lewis, that type of player, and you've got the combination of a great player at each level of the line of scrimmage, just like Baltimore had in every single Super Bowl and great defense they had with Baltimore and most great defenses throughout time. You have a great defensive line player, a great linebacker, and a great secondary player. And look, Ed Reed, Ray Lewis, Peter Bulware, or Terrell Suggs, and you look at like the 15 Broncos, you Vaughn, Trevathan, and Ward or Tlaib, or I mean that list goes on and on. The no fly zone is full of dudes. Chris Harris Jr. So you know it's. When you're looking at the dynamic of the defenses, they have good players at the linebacker level in L.A., but they don't have great ones. And if they find one, they're going to be even scarier than they are. The Packers get a good win over Philly. Philly is totally imploded. I don't think you fire Doug Peterson. I don't think you get rid of Carson Wentz. Even if you need to figure out what's going on with Jalen Hurts, that's fine. You drafted the kid, play him, figure it out. That's all well and good. But I think that, look, if Philly wants to pull the ripcord on Carson Wentz right now, I'll take him in Denver quick. Send him our way. We'll send you a fifth or a sixth round draft pick. We'll eat the contract for the next 2 or 3 years that he's on, competition for Drew Lock, and that guy can come in, and hopefully Denver can build a defense and a system around him that can benefit Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz is stuck behind the worst offensive line in football. They've got good names on the O-line. They did. Everyone's hurt. Lane Johnson's out. Kelsey can't play with everybody who's out around him. They've got two young guys playing on the tackles who are getting beat like Cherokee drums. The left guard in the game the other night was just – get murked. I don't like the play calling from Doug Peterson, but he's between a rock and a hard place because he has no receivers to throw the ball to. Denver's skill position players and their offensive line looking at next year and then moving forward is head and shoulders better than what they have in Philadelphia. I think that it could be a benefit if Wentz were to go that route. I'm just saying, if they want to get rid of him this fast, I'm sure that there's a lot of teams out there that would be open arms, and Denver's one of them, especially from a competition standpoint. We'll obviously talk about that with Cody Rourke when he joins us here on episode 94 of McChesney Unchained. So the NFC's got some great teams. I still like New Orleans. They play great defense. Or Davis, the middle linebacker, is absolute monster on the field. He's been killing people all year. Tampa Bay's going to sneak in and play on the road the opening week. I'm telling you, don't sleep on Tom Brady in the playoffs. That's all I'm saying. I'm very eager to see what he looks like as a true for maybe the first time in his elite career. I'm not talking about when he was a rook and he just happened to catch fire with a really good defensive team and Bill Belichick. I'm talking about legit underdog status. He wins his opening round playoff game and maybe they go to New York and he wins that game against the 7 or 8 win Giant team. And they have to go on the road against the Packers in Lambeau. They have to go on the road again in New Orleans. You know how hard it is to beat a team 3 times. So I think sleeping on Tom Brady would be idiotic. And trust me, there's people that are going to do it. This is the way it goes. So I think that there's a ton of potential for great playoff games. I don't think you're going to see a lot of ass beatings, which is a good thing. But again, full circle, man, the refs really need to get their shit together and stop with the ticky-tack pass interference calls, the ticky-tack illegal contact calls, the really, really bad roughing the passer calls. The guys are trying their best to roll off him. What do you want him to do, blow him a kiss? You want him to write him a note, be like, I sacked you, yes, no, or maybe. I mean, circle one of the three. What the fuck? So it doesn't – they don't need to just pussify the game as much as they are. I understand that they've allowed the violence – to be dictated out. And I'm okay with that to a point. At least I got to play in an era where you could tattoo somebody and they high five you instead of find you. I think the game can be played at a violent level and still like reffed correctly. They need to let these guys, every time somebody gets hit hard, it's not a penalty. The shoulder is not the helmet. I see it consistently. They need to start doing a better job of looking at that play the way that they look at turnovers. Every time there's a targeting call, look at the call. Don't just – everybody at home can see it was shoulder. They're not leading with the head. It's amazing to me that the replay process is not caught up with the viewer. I mean, it hasn't even caught up with the viewer yet. Now, you got to be kidding me with this shit. So, again, the refs need to figure this out. The playoffs, AFC and NFC, both sides are going to be awesome, except for, of course, the one NFC East team that's going to sneak in there and keep potentially a 10-win team in the NFC out of the playoffs. I wonder if they'll ever really look at that because there's such a premium put on in every single meeting room I've ever been in the National Football League. There's such a massive premium put on winning your division. I really doubt that they'll ever just go like record because then it does matter. I mean, who gives a shit? New York's been at it forever, whereas now they're literally fighting for a playoff spot and they're the only team that has that opportunity in that division. I'm not saying they're the only one that could win. I'm saying they're the only team that has that opportunity around the NFL, them and Washington, and even Dallas is still in it. So that makes it very unique when you're talking about divisions. So I doubt they'll ever change that. But again, I think the playoffs have a chance to be elite, to say the least. So we're going to bring on my good friend Cody Rourke here. Remember, you can follow Cody at Cody Rourke NFL on Twitter. And he's the host of Locked On the Broncos and a contributor for Pro Football Network. Our guest here, Cody Rourke, joins us on episode 94 of McChesney Unchained. It's my honor and pleasure to bring on my good friend and the host of Locked On the Broncos, contributor for Pro Football Network. Follow him on Twitter at Cody Rourke NFL. Mr. Cody Rourke joins us here on McChesney Unchained, episode 94, joining the big guy to talk about your Denver Broncos and our almost win and our 11th straight loss to the Kansas City Chiefs. on Sunday Night Football. And Cody, how are you, brother? Welcome to the show, and I'm glad you could take some time today to talk to Broncos Country about their love affair with Drew Lock.
Absolutely, Matt. Thank you so much for having me. Love what you're doing here. I love the unfiltered version. I mean, that's the way I want to be at times. So I live vicariously through you. And yeah, anytime we get to, you know, talk about the Broncos, the state of Denver, what's going on, I think it's a great opportunity to continue to talk about some of the bigger topics that Broncos fans are very interested in.
So let me ask you this right off the bat. I love your film breakdowns, and the one you did to Shelby Harris running on an angle was outstanding. I'm a huge – I talk to my defensive guys about this all the time. If you don't pursue the football, you're a scrub. You know, it's going to show up on tape eventually. Offense and defense, you need to chase the ball. Why is it and look, I'm huge on effort. I love it. Why don't we see this kind of effort from everybody all the time instead of just highlighting it so much on one dude? He ran by three or four guys there.
Yeah, he did. I mean, he backtracked. I mean, I believe he was lined up in a three technique initially, took a step inside the A gap, and then saw Hill going
three tech backside. Yep.
And he took the perfect angle in terms of pursuit. And, you know, you see that and you wonder, well, how come other guys aren't given that effort? I think it really depends. I mean, this is where football is so intricate, Matt, and you know this as well as I do. You can have 10 guys that want it really bad, but if one guy doesn't want it that bad, it could affect everybody, right? And so I think it's also the outlier where you look at Shelby on this play, backtracking against Tyreek Hill, the fastest dude in the National Football League. And Shelby prevents the touchdown from happening because the Broncos, they broke down. They didn't take great angles in terms of Kareem Jackson. He ran into Michael Ojemudia, saying Bass, he got too far to the outside. And so Tyreek Hill had that sideline. But yeah, I mean, I think overall, if you can get guys to play consistently, 11 guys, and it goes back to that Broncos defense in 2015. That was a group of 11 guys that I felt like everybody had the effort and that dog in them. You got to have that consistently to be successful in the NFL.
And the accountability level in 2015, everybody respected Wade, but they were accountable to each other, not necessarily a coach. I mean, I had to watch the game in Spanish, unfortunately, and then that made it interesting, to say the least. But it was kind of fun, to be completely honest with you. It was way more exciting than Chris Collinsworth, I'll tell you that. But that's neither here nor there. Let me get your opinion on this real quick, okay? Drew Lock. I've been hearing a lot, and there's two sides here. There's the side in Denver with the media and fans that, yeah, he's not playing well, but they think he's going to be great, and we just need to be patient. And then there's the side, and this is the side that I reside on, where he's not just playing bad, he's getting us beat, and he's putting Denver in position where, again, it doesn't matter how good their defense plays or if they run the football because of the situation the quarterback puts them in. Where do you fall on this?
Yeah, it's really hard to kind of figure out where I really lie. I mean, I could see from both sides. I do believe that Drew Lock, I mean, he has not lived up to the expectation. I think everybody has hope from him, right? I mean, you can talk about the flashes that Drew has, but the flashes are flashes. You know, the things that he's doing well aren't helping the Broncos enough, more so than the things he's not doing so well are hurting them. He's putting them in more inopportune positions. The first interception of the evening, I mean, he just had a great play to Noah Fant down the left sideline in a one-on-one against Breland.
Okay.
And he follows it up by not even seeing Nick Vinette, who is a safe dump-off option when Fumagalli turns it to an out-and-up. He doesn't put enough air on it, and it's a very risky throw. So I would say his decision-making, you know, I don't know if the Broncos are going to move forward from Drew Lock after the season. His play has not been what anybody has hoped for, probably not even himself, but it's evident. Denver needs to bring in at least some competition in 2021. I mean, I don't think you can enter 2021 fully invested in saying, hey, Drew Lock is the guy we're going to roll with in 2021. We're going to give him another year. I don't know if Denver can afford that luxury there.
And Cody, I was just talking about this to myself a little bit earlier before we brought you on. The Carson Wentz in Philly or another guy like him, like a Matt Stafford situation is different, but you look at Carson Wentz and they may run him out of Philadelphia. And if they were to run him out, he's the kind of guy where Denver, you trade a fifth or a sixth rounder for him and take that contract on. There's your competition and can't legit competition. We're not just saying it's competition, but it's going to go to one guy, a bona fide starter, a guy who was in an MVP race. And then a kid who's had a ton of opportunity who can't figure it out. Maybe this is the kind of pressure he needs. I'm of the mindset that Drew Lock doesn't possess it mentally. I never see him walk up to the line of scrimmage and Mike Point, the most dangerous defender. He never walks up and takes his time with the play clock to kind of dictate to the defense and see what they're doing with false calls. It's either we're late to the line of scrimmage because he has a hard time getting the play call in, or he's up there and he's rushing it with 20 seconds left and not exploiting the opportunity he has to view. The play clock, in my opinion, is an opportunity to go up and go, hey, white 90, white 90, hot, easy, easy, easy. Hey, 57's the mic, Louis, squeeze gap. You know, all those little things that people don't see, that people don't understand, that's what makes great quarterbacks great or average or terrible. What is the – why can't the quarterbacks in Denver take what they're being taught in the meeting room and take it to the field? I watched Rippon do it this year. I watched him do it against Tampa when he came in off the bench. I watched him do it against the Jets. I watched Simeon do it a couple of times, but not consistently. Why can't they do it? What's the breaking point, Cody?
Yeah, you know, I think it's hard to really find the definitive NFL quarterback. You look at Aaron Rodgers, you look at Russell Wilson, Patrick Mahomes, even on Sunday, Patrick Mahomes was like, hey, cover zero. Wait, roll that back. And it forced the Broncos defense to say, do we change back to the front that we were initially in pre-snap? Because Denver, they'll line up initially, and then they'll move right before the snap happens, which is, I love that about them defensively. But for Drew Lock, I mean, absolutely. We haven't seen it. He's just under center, hike. And it's like Madden. It reminds me a lot of Madden. You're not really doing too much audibling. But even to your point to Brett Rippon's the guy that doesn't have the arm strength, but he has the mental capacity to run an offense. Drew Lock has the physical traits, but I think for him, he lacks the mental processing, as you had mentioned. Yeah, you can't wait and hope that it comes along. You can't play, you know, safeguard. You can't safeguard him. You got to make sure that you have a plan. Look, if Drew Lock can't do the things that the coaches are asking him to do and he can't do it consistently, Vic Fangio said it yesterday, Drew has got to cut down on the interceptions. He's got to cut down on the poor decisions. If you cannot consistently do that, if you can't turn in these performances, you can't have as much time to be an NFL quarterback. I'm sorry, the shelf life is just not there. So I agree with you 110%. I think that's really the dilemma we run into. Drew has the physical tools, but we're seeing so much inconsistency with his mental processing that it's hurting his ability to maybe be the guy going forward.
So what, a change at offensive coordinator again and a change at head coach? I'm of the mindset that I don't understand how Vic Fangio keeps his job. I don't see them beating Carolina. I don't see them beating Buffalo and who they have, the Raiders and who else?
Then they have Chargers. Chargers and Bills. So it's
Chargers,
a tough road.
Bills, Raiders, Carolina. I mean, I don't see them winning any of those games. The Chargers are going to be pissed off trying to – after they blew the game in Denver, although they got waxed on Sunday – that's going to be for maybe the third pick or the fourth pick. Okay, so where do you sit on this then? Do you really want them to go win two of the next four? Or is it – I mean, I'm not saying I want them to tank. They can go compete. I know Shelby Harris is saying everybody's playing for their job, and that's awesome. I'm with all that. But 4-12 and an opportunity to get Fields or Trevor Lawrence or one of these dudes at the top of the draft, that's appealing to me. It's way more appealing than beating Carolina.
Yeah. No, absolutely. You know, and this is where I ask myself too, because I think about this as well. If Denver is in a position to take one of those guys, yes, I think when it comes to a talent like Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields, I would say that's an easy decision to make. Like if they're available, you have to take one of those two players there, which we know that Trevor Lawrence is probably going to be gone one overall, unless he decides to magically declare to go back to Clemson. But Justin Fields is that next guy. Now, I think the quarterbacks behind them, that's where I'm a little bit skeptical as to would I risk taking another quarterback if it's not any of those two guys. That's where I'd probably go with the more veteran option route at QB. Yeah, I mean, like you mentioned, Carolina, everybody projected them to be the number one overall pick in this upcoming year's draft based on how young they were, the rebuild that they have. They have competed. They have a young defense, and they are flying around very ferociously. Jeremy Chinn playing really good football for them. Christian McCaffrey's back in the fold for them this week. And then it doesn't get any easier because then you play the Buffalo Bills, who are red hot right now. They're eating everybody up. They're playing physical, smash-mouth offensive football. Josh Allen's playing better than we expected. Then you play the Chargers. Like I mentioned, you know, they want that revenge, and it's on the road. This is a game where Chris Harris Jr. will more than likely play in that game too, so motivation there. And then a tough Raiders football team that they just have weapons galore, and they have a physical style of running the football. And you're an offensive line guy. They love getting nasty in the trenches, and I feel like a lot of the issues that Denver has had this year, you had moments where Denver could dominate in the trenches. Then you have moments where they go series, two series, three series of getting pushed back. And I think that's really just the ebb and flow of the NFL and this Broncos season is they've got to find a way to really put it together. They can compete, like you mentioned. Can they win? I mean, I think they have a chance to win, but at this point you're evaluating, where do you see yourself? That to me, I think, is where you have to look at it from the Broncos side of things.
All right, Cody. So look, man, it gets to the point where we're beating this drum with Vic Fangio and Pat Schumer, and I'm not trying to be an ageist or anything, but the older school generation of the NFL, Schumer and Fangio were coaching in the NFL when I was in the league. I know they can coach. No one's saying they can't. I know they can. I know they can coach at a high level. I know Vic Fangio's an all-pro defensive coordinator. I know Schumer has been a head coach and has done everything. I'm not sitting here questioning that. I'm saying, is it time, not necessarily because Vic needs to go or Pat needs to go, is it time for the Broncos to look at themselves in the mirror from the front office perspective and go, young, offensive-minded head coach that can absolutely and unequivocally relate to Justin Fields, Trevor Lawrence, Drew Lock, that can bring some of these college schemes in that puts pressure on defenses? I saw Andy Reid acclimate to do it. I don't think Vic can. The guy won't even go for it on the plus side of the 40 against the most explosive offense in NFL history. So I don't think he has the ability to change in that regard. So at what point does Denver need to look at themselves in the mirror and go, we got to change? It's either acclimate or die. And, yep. And I'm telling you right now, it looks like we're going the die road rather than the acclimate and learn how to survive through this. Thoughts?
Yeah, I think logistically you look at it, Vic is a defensive coach, so, and you can see some of the decisions he makes in games, particularly late, that he operates with the thinking of a defensive coordinator, right? And so I think that the trend in the NFL, everyone wants these young, explosive offenses. How do you get it, right? And I think the Broncos have the personnel to do it. I mean, if you're telling me that KJ Hamler, Jerry Jeudy, Noah Fant, Phillip Lindsay, Melvin Gordon, and Cortland Sutton when he comes back, and even Tim Patrick, who's playing some of the best football of his career, if these guys can't be an explosive offense, they've got the guys to do it. They've got the offensive line right now, too. I think the way they can eventually be there. The question is, you know, with the way of thinking, do you operate from the defensive head coach mentality? Do you bring in a young guy? I think it's a gamble. And I think really for Denver, we're seeing last year when they decided to fire Rich Scangarello after the season, initially a week before they had said, look, we're coming back with everybody there. I think it was a major gamble. We're not seeing it pay off. Denver might have to do that, but I think that goes to a bigger question regarding the Broncos ownership situation right now and the direction of the franchise. Do they really want to make a lot of changes right now with all of this? I feel like that's one of the biggest obstacles holding this team back, but no, I agree with you, Matt. You know, I think the appeal of having a young offensive mind, we all knew Kyle Shanahan, that was going to be the key when the Broncos decided to part ways with Gary Kubiak, when Gary Kubiak stepped down. Everyone was looking at Kyle Shanahan, and then we all know the story there. There was a veto by Joe Ellis. Right. So it's who is that next guy? I mean, if there is a guy in your mind, Matt, who do you think would be that young offensive minded head coach that you could look at in 2021?
You know, I would take a really hard, long look at Joe Brady at Carolina. I don't really care about the team record. I know what he can do up here if given the pieces. And I love what he's done with McCaffrey. That offense is legit, man. They get after people. I think Carolina next year is going, if he stays there, they're going to be scary. They're going to just get better, and they're probably going to be, you know, looking at the playoffs and that wild card in a great division. I like Eric Bieniemy, but I don't think that EB should come to Denver. I think he should stay away from Colorado and the roots and all that crap. It's going to be undue pressure. And the minute he's not successful, it's going to be Andy Reid had all the success and he doesn't know what he's doing. And if he is successful, I would love for him to be the head coach here. I think it would be awesome. For some reason, I just don't think it works. And then after that, they need to comb the college ranks because in my opinion, it's hard to evaluate coaches just based on records. I think you need to evaluate how their team and what they've done with certain personnel groupings and how they – or not personnel groupings, what they do with certain personnel just in general. And then my number one question for everybody that if I were interviewing them would be all situational football questions. What are you doing on the plus side of the 40? How many times are you actually going to punt as opposed to go for it inside fourth and five in competitive football games? Things of that. How do you look at the two-minute situation? Is this an opportunity for you to attack, or are you taking knee with 40-second type? I think conservative coaching doesn't have a place in modern-day NFL anymore. I need the gunslinger coach mentality, because as a player, I can always go with the coach that walks in and goes, I believe in y'all. Frank Reich last year, when they were 1-5,
yeah,
was going for it on fourth down. They lost the game. Everybody was calling for his job. And what happened? His team totally turns around. They make the playoffs. He's totally selling out for his guys. And now they're a legit playoff contender and great defense. And it's a destination. People want to go there and play. So I think that looking at it like that is probably the way that they should do it. Now, I don't think they will. I think that if Vic sticks around, and I think we're going to be having the same conversation next year at the same damn time, unfortunately. And that just is what it is. All right, Cody.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Keep going, brother. What's up?
So with that, I wanted to actually throw something your way. You know, I love the work that you do in terms of the offensive line, your film reviews that you have as well. You break down a lot of stuff here. Now, early in the beginning of the season, we saw the Broncos rookie center, Lloyd Cushenberry. You know, a lot of teams were lining up their defensive tackle in a zero technique. They were slanting across his face, sending the inside linebacker in the A gap to try to occupy right there. What have you noticed from Lloyd Cushenberry? Have you seen any progression from him as to where he was at the beginning of the season to against the Kansas City Chiefs? Did he do anything better? Has he improved from week one?
I mean, yes, he's absolutely improved from week one, but he's also giving up more because people have tape on him too. Lloyd doesn't seem to understand the angles of football yet. He's just playing. He's making calls and doing his job the majority of the time, but he doesn't understand the little intricacies of the game and the angles and how much it can affect the way he steps, the way his hands operate as the center. Okay. He has such an advantage on the nose tackle. He knows the snap count. He has independent hand transition. I never see him attack the Riddell of the middle of the helmet. I never see him attack the V of the neck with his opposite hand. He should be snapping an opposite hand, striking the V of that neck constantly. I never see him pointing. The most dangerous, he's very rarely the point of communication rather than the echo. As the center, he needs to be the point of the communication with the quarterback, not the echo. And to be honest with you, when your quarterback doesn't know what the hell he's doing and he won't communicate, and then you have a rookie center, I think that it's a very under-evaluated part of this season. And I know the Jets are 0-12 and Connor's my guy, and I don't mean to sound like a homer here, but McGovern and Locke played together at Missouri. They were boys. McGovern was his big brother, mentor guy at Missouri, and helped him with all that. He was a huge help with them last year in those last five, because all the communication was being done through Connor and Drew trusted him. And they got rid of him and brought in Glasgow for $60 million. And I think he's been severely disappointing. And you draft a rookie center who doesn't know what the hell he's doing, and you don't help the quarterback learn the system and the terms, especially in Schumer's system, which is extremely term-oriented, rather than just going in there and going, hey, why not trips right, tight end iso, Sarah, flip it to Sally if, ready, and just roll. So I think that's a very underrated part of this, and I think Lloyd has the potential to be great. I mean, he's got all the tangible skills you look for. He's long, he's big, he's got good feet, but the center is a thinking man's position, number one. So he's got to get that going in the offseason. He needs to find somebody. I'm right over here, but he probably won't come in. From what I hear, I'm too mean. Can you fucking believe that? I'm too mean. So that's why certain guys don't want to work, and that's fine. I'll work with the all pros that want to show up, like Ryan Jensen and Billy Turner and things of that nature. So I'd like to see Denver hold on to the guys they developed, Cody, but we've talked about this several times, you know, just through text message, DM, and just talking. They never keep their guys that they develop. They constantly let their developmental projects go all the time. So it's something they have to fix up there first. And personally, I'd love to see a guy like Austin Slotman get more of an opportunity at center, assuming that Lloyd doesn't take the right direction. I hope he turns into the all-pro he could be.
Yeah, no, and I agree with you there too. I think Austin Schlottman, he had a great training camp. He, you know, he really came in and he put on some weight. I mean, obviously he's been working on his fundamentals too. He's just a guy that I think is piecing it together mentally as well.
Right over here, brother.
You could see the processing for him. I mean, there's times he doesn't react. There was a play where Chris Jones was lined up in a one tech. Actually, no, he's lined up in a three tech, slanted across, and Schlottman did a great job of pushing him down, crashing him down, and then there was that opening right there for Philip Lindsay to hit.
Off the hands, shoulder.
Yes. Yep. It was great, and I actually did that on my film review that's going to post tomorrow. But the one question I have for you, as it pertains to the running game, too, we see different success for Philip Lindsay sometimes and Melvin Gordon. What is the issue with Denver offensively with the running back position? Are they misutilizing Philip Lindsay in the style that he can? Because a lot of times I see them really trying to run him inside on middle runs. I don't feel like that's his strength. I feel like power, what we saw against the Miami Dolphins, them getting the center and the guard to pull and to be able to kick out on the edge, get a numbers advantage. That's where we see Philip Lindsay have the most success. What is your thought on that?
Yeah, and I agree with you on Schlottman too. I think he's been doing a great job. I've been working with Austin since he walked in as an undrafted free agent. It's great to see him taking the steps he's taken. It's awesome as a coach to see what you teach applied. I work with Phil too, and Phil's a vertical runner. Phil can stretch zone. He's one of the he can do it great, and he's great on the cutback. But Phil wants to put his one foot in the ground and get vertical and attack you. And it's Melvin Gordon's that same way, but Melvin Gordon is very Le'Veon Bellish in his I'm going to pick, choose, and then he makes his decision. Phil's decision is made before he even gets the ball. It's how can I get vertical as fast as humanly possible? Personally, I think that the Broncos don't give themselves an opportunity, Cody, to be a great running football team because they don't commit to the damn run consistently.
Yeah.
Bro, how many rushing yards did they have on Sunday night?
I believe close it was to 200, right? Yeah. And it was those spring runs.
I mean,
they had,
a couple of QB scrambles. 112 in the first quarter?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm of the mindset that this it's pass happy NFL. Everybody needs to throw the ball over the yard, blah, blah, blah. I think that in today's football, if you can control the time of possession and dominate the line of scrimmage and not give up on the run just because it didn't work the first three or four carries of the game, you'll dominate football games. And personally, I think that Gordon and Lindsay, I don't care how it's split up, minimum 45 rushing attempts a game. Period. Yeah,
I like
and
that.
However you want to split it between Melvin and Phil, that's fine. I don't give a shit. But that gives you about 20 to 25 throws, which is perfect, and sets up huge shots and pocket movement and screens. You want the run game to open up a little bit more? Learn how to run a goddamn screen pass in Denver. That screen pass they ran to Melvin the other night was excellent. The screen passes don't need to be crazy intricate. They don't need to be like all these different adjustments to receiver. Just basic middle screen to the running back. Set it up correctly. Dip and dink the ball and let them turn a running play or turn a passing play into a running play, getting the ball behind the line of scrimmage, which is a pass, but it just allows them to be a running back first. That it just builds confidence. So I think that that's one of the things that you'd like to see. But to be completely honest with you, Cody, and this is the last question I got for you here on episode 94 of McChesney Unchained, huge thanks to my man Cody Rourke for coming on the show today and spitting some fire and knowledge for your Denver Broncos. I don't think Phil Lindsay is going to be back here next year. I think these are the last four games you're going to see him. How do you feel about that? So we can talk about it all you want, but they made it very clear that Melvin Gordon is the guy.
Yeah, you know, I think for me, just seeing what Philip Lindsay has done in his first two seasons, back-to-back 1,000-yard rushing seasons. I mean, I watched him in the first practice at training camp as an undrafted rookie free agent. He cuts up inside with Case Keenum, breaks through the A-gap. Doma Tapeko looks around like, hey, where did this guy go? Brandon Marshall misses, and everyone's like, hey, that is our guy, right? That is a defense at the time. You had guys on that defense that were like, hey, this guy's talented. This guy's special. And then last season, we saw Philip Lindsay literally climb his way to 1,000 yards, fighting for every inch. Even though a lot of the opportunities weren't there, he was facing a lot of, being stuffed in the backfield, making things happen, even though that plays broke down on the interior. Philip Lindsay has done so much for Denver, and I think it also goes to the point, there is a narrative that Denver doesn't take care of its guys, And if they allow Philip Lindsay to go, if that is the case, if he's not back next year, it's a big travesty because he's going to go on to some other team. He's going to have massive success, probably bigger than what he's had in Denver. And he's going to be a premier guy in the National Football League, more so than he already is now. He doesn't get enough respect, in my opinion. I think from national media outlets, everyone wants to talk about Melvin Gordon. Melvin Gordon's a great back. Don't get me wrong there. But Philip Lindsay has, in my opinion, earned the role to be the guy in Denver. And it's all about surrounding him with the talent, being able to create opportunities for him to succeed. If they don't do that, then I tell you what, it's a big loss, and Denver will regret it one day.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, Cody. I think that they don't really know how to utilize him. And in that system, he's been underutilized in back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons. So imagine what you can do with a guy who you're actually rolling with. All right, that is episode 94 of McChesney Unchained, coming to you from the studio here at 6-0 Strength. Thank you to my man Cody Work for coming on the show. Remember, Cody is the host of Locked On the Broncos and contributor for Pro Football Network. Follow Cody at Cody Work NFL on Twitter. Follow me at 6-0 Academy on Twitter and Instagram for all things football related, training related, and of course McChesney Unchained related. DNVR Unchained is the Twitter account for the show. Cody, thank you very much, brother, for all your time. Have a great day. Adam, thanks for producing the hell out of episode 94, the Alfred Williams episode, my favorite player of all time. Episode 95 comes to you next Tuesday after the Broncos hopefully take an L this week so we can get to 4-12. That is McChesney Unchained. I'm your host, Matt McChesney. Peace.